shirt on and your brown coat too. Everybody's joining the crew at the Geek Tank. At the Geek Tank, Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Hi, I'm Guy.
Hi, I'm Troy.
And this is Geek Tank Season 2.
It's a really good podcast-sized podcast.
We're at our favorite Starbucks again today at First and Wandsworth.
Yep, today we're talking about what makes it good. And specifically for Section 1, what makes science fiction good. Section 2, what makes fantasy good. And Section 3, what makes the superhero genre good.
Right. And stay tuned after the credits for our Ask Us Anything segment, which is our new thing for Season 2. You can join that conversation by emailing us at questions at RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
And ask us anything.
And ask us anything. Ah. Okay,
he's doing the abbreviation. He's saying the word of the abbreviation, A-U-A, as a word. He's
Aua.
Not pretending to be a car from 1950.
Aruda.
My co-host is a car.
Speaking of bad shows,
yes.
My mother is a car.
Yep. So science fiction is definitely, I would say, at the top of your favorite genres, Mr. Davis.
It definitely is. And I think it's certainly one of your top three.
Yeah.
By far.
It definitely is a heck of a contender for number one. And in a lot of cases, my favorite movies are sci-fi.
Yeah.
The two that are number one, which if you can have two movies as a number one, are both sci-fis.
Yeah.
So, which would be Cloud Atlas and Blade Runner.
Yes. And, of course, Blade Runner is a Philip K. Dick
Yes, who
novel.
Does tons of sci-fi.
Right, who's notorious for his science fiction-y stories. So
one thing that I think I should point out at the top of this, because we're going to see this through all three, what makes a good story would be the hero's journey.
Right.
Which was conceptualized from Joseph Campbell's book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And we can get more into what the hero's journey is later, but I think
we could probably do an entire show on hero's journey.
We so could.
Star Wars is hero's journey.
Oh, yeah.
And not only that, that's what made The Force Awakens is also hero's journey.
Right. And it's most of your Greek mythology is all hero's journey, and that's where it came about. And it's so... Setting aside good story, because good story, good character development is going to run through all three of these.
Right. You're not going to see a whole lot of Lost in Space, from 1960 in here when you're putting it up against Star Trek.
Yeah.
I mean, just really, they weren't in the same league.
Let's look at what sets it aside as a science fiction. What makes a science fiction a good science fiction other than what makes a story a good story type thing?
Well, I think a good science fiction for me has always been it's got to make you think. I mean, that's and I know that I'm spoiled because I'm a Star Trek fan, and I mean, the number of times that a Star Trek episode had ended and I just sat there and stared at the TV in shock because my world just got shook up a little bit, and I'm now thinking about something I didn't think about before. And it started with, like we've said before, some of the famous ones, Let This Be Your Last Battlefield, where I suddenly realized just how stupid racism was, because that whole episode's about how stupid racism is. And it just shook my world. I moved over, being a Southern boy and having racism in the universe around you there, that was sort of a thing that was like all of a sudden it was just illustration, and... Bam! It shook my world.
It made you think about it.
Yeah, but even then, like I always say, my wife and I had like a 4-hour discussion based on Darmok from Next Gen about how you would even have a culture that only worked in idioms.
And for those who haven't seen the episode,
for those that have not seen Darmok, that's an episode where the children of Tamar are. They only speak in idioms, so they can only speak, they say Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, and that's all they can say to one another is they only speak in these idioms.
Yes, and you had Captain Picard and the Enterprise, this is from Next Generation.
Not understanding, because
they're having communication issues, and then they end up being beamed on a planet, just the two of them, to have to deal with this. Which
Shaka,
is very
When the Walls Fell.
There's a really cool movie called Enemy Mine.
Enemy Mine.
Which is similar... two people who can't communicate, stuck on a planet together, having
Louis Gossett Jr.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Quaid, Dennis Quaid, I believe.
Dennis Quaid.
So
and Louis Gossett Jr. was pregnant.
And that's where I learned I could talk like the It's just a bunch of rolling the R's and the tongue and that. So
right, and clicking the tongues.
Yep. So that was cool. But that definitely was how does a race, which you and your wife were talking about, is how does an entire race, a society develop when they only have idioms that they can talk in?
And it was because of that that we both came up with this really good theory that they must be somewhat telepathic as juveniles.
Yes, they can just understand.
They can just understand one another, and they either lose their telepathy as they grow into adulthood, or it's
maybe
somehow,
they refine it.
Or they refine it or something like that. But either way, when they communicate by voice, they're just conveying. Remember that time in that one story? Mm-hmm. Remember that time? This is just like that one time in that one story. Because they've already learned all the stories as kids, as juveniles.
Which we've seen in every generation, a variation of that. Like right now, I hear a lot, and when people talk, they say, I mean. They start a sentence with, I mean.
Yeah.
Which is puzzling because
it was like when we were kids.
Like, yeah, not too long ago, people said like a lot. So it's throwing words in that aren't really necessary and trying, or you know what I mean. I remember that
you
one.
And there's words like that in Japanese that are the same thing. Nandake, eto nandake, and I heard my kids doing that a lot, and I picked up their because nandake just simply means. What's that?
Oh.
And it's pretty much, and nan is nani.
So it's buying them time.
And dake is only. Hmm. So it's only, and that's the kind of thing.
Interesting.
And I got in trouble with some of the people in Japan because I picked that up for my kids. it's an interesting thing. But yeah. I think getting back to the topic, what makes a good sci-fi is it makes you think. Hmm. I think that's for me critical.
I've always looked at when I've looked at it, and this seems to run the course for all the sci-fis that I am drawn to or I discover it, is you have a human element, and then how's that human element altered by technology? And
aliens, or whatever, or altered by your science fiction concept.
And usually the aliens are bringing in a technology or something, but it's a show that I love that really taps into this is Black Mirror.
Yeah.
By Come Back to Me Brain, Charlie Brooker. And it's on Netflix now. There's like 3 or 4 seasons. And it's a lot of it is how's technology affecting humanity, and specifically a science fiction technology, one that's not that we have or tapped into it. And definitely something that connects with it is some kind of authenticity.
Yeah.
So a believability in that science fiction.
Yeah.
And I know that for Star Trek, a lot of people just dismissed that, well, that's science fiction. It couldn't possibly happen. And
absolutely.
Look at all the things that they have predicted and done.
Right.
Where we've made our leaps with technology.
I mean, heck, I keep thinking about this, and save one or two technologies, you really pretty much could do Star Trek almost really now. We're getting to warp drive and transporters, and that's pretty much it. Within the next 2 decades, they're going to be able to do just about everything else. So,
yeah.
Which is fascinating.
Well, when you look at Blade Runner, and also part of humanity, too, is for me a good sci-fi is the questioning of who you are.
Right.
And finding
yourself.
And that
means everything, because, I mean, a lot of that is also cultural. Blade Runner and a lot of those post-apocalyptic-esque worlds are a statement about where we're going as a culture. Because they're making a statement that, you know, it's going to be gritty and dirty and nasty in the slums if we keep going this way.
Or if you take the reverse of that, Star Trek, which is a very positive outlook, still has the look of identifying who you are and not just becoming another red shirt. That you aren't just an identical piece of the machinery. And when you encounter an alien race, that is right in your face is trying to determine who you are because you're comparing your choices off of the choices these aliens have made.
Well, and I think that's also one of the reasons why Star Trek tends to stand out is because unlike the other ones, it tends to be utopia in the future. We've gotten over everything, and that's why Trekkies have something very unique.
Right.
You know, that's why the Trekkies are always – they tend to be – not always. I mean, obviously, people are people, but Trekkies tend to be positive outlooking people. because we think that, you know, okay, it may be rough right now, but hey, in 200 years, we're going to square this all away and we'll be fine.
It is true that the episodes where they have the bad guy being connected to the Federation feel weird and off.
Yeah. And they're not the way that Roddenberry wanted it. Roddenberry didn't allow that. I mean, he really didn't. If there was somebody who was broken in the Federation, they were broken. And they weren't. It wasn't the Federation that condoned it.
And usually they were broken because they'd been removed from the Federation.
Right.
For instance, like Khan.
Right.
So,
or, you know, Commodore Decker.
Right.
And, I mean, you know, the ones, they were broken because of what happened. In the instance of Commodore Decker, the monster machine of the Doomsday Machine had destroyed his ship, and he broke as a commander. And so it's like, you know, you kind of get the, he wasn't a bad guy. He just broke under the pressure of being, you know, so there you go. Well, that's our first segment, which we think is interesting.
Yeah, I think we covered a pretty good aspect.
I think we covered
It needs to be intelligent, make you think.
Yeah.
And for me, it needs to have a human aspect where it's both exploring what humanity is and also how is technology altering that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's where we got to go on this one. So there we go with our first segment. We'll be back right after this.
This is Todd Jones. You are listening to Geek Tank.
And we are back. We are at our favorite Starbucks, and we are talking about what makes blank good, and we're focusing for
I think the blanks
segment.
Are great.
Blanks.
Yeah, because they don't kill people.
They don't. Well, they can still be dangerous.
Say that to Brandon... Lee.
There you go. Yeah. I was going to let you get there by yourself.
Thanks.
On that. Of course, I can go into the whole details of that, but anyway.
Why not?
We're not talking
about that.
So we are going to focus on what makes a good fantasy, specifically medieval genre fantasy, before you people start trying to take this beyond PG-13. This is a PG-13 show. I know somebody was thinking about it besides me.
And it was you, and we know you were thinking about it.
It was me. So, fantasy stuff, I definitely think I have... I don't know. I actually don't talk to you about fantasy or fantasy genre much, so I don't know how much fantasy stuff you're into.
Well, I mean, I do love The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, which I think is pretty much the core.
The groundbreakers of it.
And then I love Star Wars, too, which is also fantasy.
It's one of those that crosses the genre, the way that Firefly crosses Western and sci-fi,
yeah. I didn't repeat you. No, I was talking at the same time. That's different.
Well, I know you had to have seen, because we're roughly the same age, Excalibur.
Yes.
And that was a groundbreaking movie because it really caught the feel of what it was like to move in heavy armor, and it had very realistic sword fights that you don't normally see in films at that time.
Right. And my mom was into Camelot.
A lot.
A lot. The musicals, so we watched that regularly. And there was... Like, there was a miniseries called Merlin at one point in time.
I remember Merlin.
And things like that. So there's a lot in that genre that is very unique. That does, I guess first we need to find out what takes fantasy and separates it from sci-fi. Because, you know, if you loop Star Wars and Lord of the Rings in together...
Well, I don't, because I definitely consider Star Wars... Star Wars has the technology, and technology is one of those defining points for me for sci-fi.
Yeah, but the way that they use the technology...
Well, it's still
there. And that's what gets me is the...
If you would have thrown faster-than-light travel spaceships into Excalibur, it would have ceased to be just a fantasy show at that time. Because to me, fantasy is taking medieval history and adding a twist to it that is not... our world.
So to you, it's critical that it be medieval history.
For fantasy, I think so. I think that once you start getting past the Three Musketeers, like up to Three Musketeers, I think could still be included in fantasy. Zorro could be included in fantasy. Once you start to get past it, I think you're in the Western genre. And so for me, fantasy, for one, has to be Three Musketeers or earlier. Preferably not Caveman, but I guess I always imagine... your classic D&D group
right.
element.
Yeah.
Although that's not what truly makes a good fantasy.
No,
fantasy,
but if you think about it from our role-playing books, that is exactly what the deal is.
Yes, because the D&D is based strongly off of Middle-earth and tokens.
But I have heard numerous times Star Wars claimed to be a fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's because of the religious element to it. And I don't mean that in a literal sense.
Right.
But when you have...
good versus evil.
It's the classic white hat versus black hat, good versus evil. It's
yep.
That's not trying to refer to our Western genre. But, I mean, you think about, to some degree, fantasy can also be samurai films in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's the definite, there's no blurry line, good versus evil, and a somewhat, and I want to say religious element, but I'm not talking about religious, it's the Jedi that we've got in, it's the magic that comes in with, you know, you've got magic users in D&D,
if you remove
you've got Jedi in Star Wars.
If you isolated Star Wars to one planet.
Excuse me.
And just instead of having multiple planets, have them different kingdoms and replace the lightsabers with flaming magic swords and then the Force with magic, you have a fantasy straight across the board.
Yeah.
They just threw that twist in there by throwing robots and such. The Clash of the Titans with their Clockwork
right,
with Owl.
Right, the Clockwork Owl. I love the Clockwork
clearly
Owl.
Clearly an R2-D2 3CPO mesh-up.
C-3PO.
Thank you. Not enough coffee yet.
No, but you need more coffee.
But I think what makes a good fantasy that is taking the tropes and twisting it for me. Because probably one of my favorite fantasy movies would be Lady Hawk. And that has a ton of tropes in it. But it also has good acting. It was really young Matthew Broderick. And Rutger Hauer. And it's the classic hero's journeys all there. You have the character who's not a hero because he's doing bad stuff. Doesn't want to get caught up in this huge... whole other adventure, refuses to go, but then ends up in it because we have Rutger Hauer, and I think it... Oh, man, her name is escaping me. I know the actress. She's another one of those famous actresses. It's jumped out of my brain.
It's been years since I've seen it.
But the two characters were in love, and they were cursed, where by day, the female must be in hawk form, and by night, she's in human form, but the hero, Rutger Hauer, is in wolf form, and so they can never be together as humans.
Except at sunset and sunrise.
And so they're trying to break the curse, and Matthew Broderick's this little cut-purse thief character who gets caught up in the whole mess.
Right.
It's a great, fun film. It has that power 80s music to it, kind of, which is out of place.
You also can count Labyrinth into that genre.
Labyrinth, Legend, Tom Cruise.
And Legend.
Early Tom Cruise.
And, I mean, you know, we've got a couple of them that fit in the fantasy genre, but don't fit in medieval. That's where I'm kind of
Labyrinth jumps universes from contemporary
to
that.
It does.
But it's still...
But I mean, you know, you've got...
If you took, the Disney film where the guy, the astronaut, goes back to Camelot.
Yeah.
It's,
But I would call that one sci-fi.
Because it's time travel.
It's time travel, and we have more of a break-your-brain sort of concept out of it.
Well, instead of trying to crack what is fantasy, what makes a good fantasy, though? Because that's not what it is.
I think we've covered a lot of the good fantasies. Right?
But what makes them
dreaming. You want to... It's a dream.
It really taps into the hero's journey.
Right. But it's a... when I watch sci-fi, I'm looking for something that's going to crack my brain. It's going to make me think something that I didn't think before. It's the same reason why I read hard sci-fi. I want to hear a concept, see a concept... understand a concept that I've never thought of before.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch fantasy, I want to escape. A dreamland. I want to be somewhere else.
I was kind of leading that way because I was trying to think probably the one fantasy movie that I've watched the most is the original Conan the Barbarian.
Right.
And I think it's the getting caught up in the adventure of an adventure that I wouldn't normally go on. For one, it's way too dangerous and I'll most likely die. Also, it involves a lot of killing, which I should probably avoid doing. At least
because
my psychiatrist says so.
Right.
But whereas with, although...
And all those dead bodies in your basement would agree?
It stinks after a while.
Yeah.
And now I'm hungry. So, but it would be
it's
one of those things
Caesars.
Where, like, with although I could see myself wanting to be in a Star Trek episode, it's a different kind of wanting to be than wanting to be in a fantasy. A fantasy has a lot more high adventure. That's the word.
Yeah, high adventure, but I also think that that's more... I mean, you're right. I think that you're really getting caught up in the fantasy itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, pun not intended, but the idea, the reason why you read high fantasy is to get caught up in the universe.
Which I think is the big appeal of Dungeons & Dragons, because that's what you're doing. You're putting yourself in that.
Well, and that's why it makes sense that D&D was the first to really get out there and do role-playing games. Because it's the one that's the most accessible. It's already a role-playing game in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You're watching it and pretending that you are Conan the Barbarian, even though you'll never be Arnie.
You know, as a kid, I rarely, if ever, played like cops and robbers or cowboys and Native Americans who were disenfranchised and killed.
Disenfranchised Native Americans.
But I was
cowboys and disenfranchised Native Americans.
Yeah. But I definitely picked up the stick and did the cutting the heads off of the dandelions and was way more into that fantasy as a child than I was the other ones.
Yeah, and I count myself as weird because my fantasy was beaming down to planets and stuff like
with
that.
With the cardboard phaser.
With the cardboard phasers.
That needs to be the name of your autobiography.
Is the cardboard phaser?
Just cardboard phaser.
Yeah, it does. That's it. I now know my autobiography.
And I want 3% royalties on that.
Right. You'll get 3% of the money that I don't make off of it, I promise.
Yes, exactly.
I think that that's where we've got... And I think that fantasy is unique in that it is designed in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I would almost be willing to say that you end up with some really strange things that lead into this genre that you wouldn't think would be in that genre.
Yeah.
For example, Jacqueline Carey has a series of Kushiel books, which are high fantasy. And they have all of the elements of high fantasy in them. But they're also very 50 Shades of Grey. Mm-hmm. Get into that zone. You know, there's a lot of...
Not for kids.
But it's a very good series.
Well, a series that's a little... Not quite good, not for kids, but more for kids than what you just suggested would be the series by Stephen Brust. Boom. It'd be the come back to me brain.
It's actually my wife's favorite series.
I know my brain just shut down.
It's the Jarrig
series with the character Tautas, who's a magic using assassin type character. And then there's also the Phoenix Guard, which is a fantasy version of the Three Musketeers, a magical fantasy version of Three Musketeers.
And Stephen Brust is very, very influenced by Dumas. Which is why he's got that same kind of language and that same kind of patterning of speech, because he's mimicking Dumas's version of the Three Musketeers in the actual way that the books were written.
It was the weirdest thing for that series for me was that there are elves, but elves call themselves humans.
Yeah.
And I forget what humans are called, but they're not called humans.
Right.
So that was a weird thing to get past in that series.
Which is, there's all kinds of stuff. That series is completely hooked on that series by my wife, who loves that series to death. And she got me hooked on it. And it's her go-to series. You know, whenever she's feeling bad or kind of down, she'll go and reread those books. Mm-hmm. I think she's reread those books like 100 times.
Nice.
Which I think is really cool. I mean, you know, it's like, I go watch Star Trek whenever I need to, like, huddle and band and huddle and kind of regroup and figure out where my center is.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes and rereads those books to find her center. And I think that's fascinating.
Well, we probably should be going to break.
We should.
Yeah. So you guys have a little fantasy while we go through this break. And when we come back, we will talk about what makes a good superhero genre.
You could also beam down and with cardboard phasers.
Thank you.
talking about what makes a good sh. And in this instance, we're going to do what makes a good superhero
show.
Superhero show.
I include females in the superhero category. Heroines.
Heroine has become a drug now, and so I just call them superheroes.
Just recently? Well, I did not know that.
Yeah, just last week.
Okay.
So,
It's kind of like actors and actresses. There was a movement a while back to just call everybody actors. Which I completely agree with.
And I do too, because an actor is also used non-gender-wise in programming. As in a lot of the, like, not programming, but animation specifically, it refers to the thing moving on the screen as the actor. And it doesn't matter
I'm sure actors love to be referred to as the things moving on the screen.
But it refers to anything that's actively moving on the screen. And it could be cars, it could be airplanes, it could be anything. It's not a background, it's an actor.
So just so you know, when we say superheroes, that's what we're talking about.
We're talking about
makes a good superhero. Well, off the top of your head, movie-wise, let's go with a movie. What is the best superhero movie that you can think of?
Wow.
By the way, we don't script any of this or practice, so that's why
I'm umming over.
Yeah,
here.
we don't spend the time.
He just threw that at me. Because the truth is, it's whatever I'm thinking or whatever I'm watching right now.
Yeah.
I think of all of the genres we've talked about, superhero is my weakest of the three.
Because you didn't watch a ton of them.
I didn't watch a ton of them when I was a kid.
You didn't really collect comic books per se either.
No, I didn't. I as we've discussed previously, if you're just joining us, but as I've discussed previously, I didn't like in the 80s, I read the comics and they were very weak, so I went to Japanese comics, and the stories there were much richer and more detailed. So now I'm just now coming back to superheroes, and I really enjoy anti-heroes,
right.
Like X-23. I really love X-23.
The heroes who don't want to be a hero.
Right. Well, or really screwed up and messed up. And X-23 is, she's an ex-prostitute and all kinds of... She has a real rough time in the world, in the universe, being who she is. And those characters... So for me, I think I'm looking for something wrong. I don't know. I may not be coming into this genre, because I love The Watchmen, you know? For that very reason, and they were all broken.
There's some strong differences between the book and the movie.
Yeah.
So, do you have a preference, or are they?
I have read the books and have only watched about 20 minutes of the movie before my son came downstairs, and I thought you can't stop at that.
Yeah, you can't watch that with a 13-year-old.
I've got the movie. I just haven't watched it yet.
So you don't know the differences really at this point.
Yeah.
For some people, the differences were
significant.
Morally significant, although the changes themselves weren't that different. It's more the message got changed. So,
but we still got the same thing. Rorschach was a very broken, screwed up character.
Well, you have a world that's broken that has decided it doesn't need heroes.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's illegal to go out and be a hero.
Right. Right. And it's like Old Man Logan.
It's
really intrigues me.
The original, I haven't read the other version. Apparently there's another version that's different than the version I read. The version I read, I was like, they can't make this into a movie.
Yeah.
This is not going to be allowed.
Right.
But I thought the same thing with Walking Dead, because there's stuff that happens in that I knew just weren't going to be allowed. And I was right. It's not. They took it out.
Yeah.
But this comes about to Watchmen's like a really dark grown-up version of The Incredibles.
Mm-hmm.
Because superheroes are not allowed.
Right.
And
I love The Incredibles, too.
I bring it up because when I was asked you the question, I did not also have an answer for it. But while you were talking, I'm like, I have to put The Incredibles as my favorite superhero movie.
Yeah.
And I know
yeah,
it's
I think
animated.
You're right.
But it's...
As an animator... I don't think that's a distinction we should be making. Mm-hmm. I think animation's a genre, or not a genre, but a transport, mm-hmm. like black and white. You use it to illustrate a point.
Yeah. But for me, the what makes a good superhero genre, and this ties in a bit to the broken characters, is you need to have a character who can do something that other people can't do.
Right.
Whether it's because of mutant powers or they're an alien or they're super rich and have all these gadgets and physical capabilities, they can do something that most people can't do.
Right.
And they must then decide to use that ability in a way that is generally for good.
And in a way, superhero categories end up being somewhat between the other two that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Because it's got gadgets and technology.
Mm-hmm. They can.
And it's good and evil. And it's very black and white. Unless they start graying it out like they do with Watchmen and...
Mm-hmm. Well, superhero shows typically are present day or the distant, not too distant future.
Right.
You don't see a lot of Western superheroes.
There you go, guys. There's your new genre.
Yep. Super cowboy.
Super cowboy. I think that when I think about superheroes, though, there was also... It also is almost like it has rules to the storytelling. And you can either follow the rules or intentionally break the rules, but you must choose. You know, you are either Batman walking up the side of the building with Robin, mm-hmm. or you are Frank Miller's Dark Knight. And there's no in between, really. You can't be somewhat between those two. You're either good or you're good by killing people. You know what I mean? It's like nothing in between. And
well, I think I've been watching. Michael Keaton, the very first Batman.
Yeah.
Danny Elfman found, I think, that line. Because that Batman did not kill, but he also was not the super campy walking up the side. And it wasn't until Joe Schumacher came in with Batman 3 with Batman and Robin where things got really stupid, not Elfman's fault. But
no. Elfman you're talking about either. Elfman made the music.
Or not Elfman. I'm sorry, Tim Burton.
Burton.
Yeah. Well, Burton and Elfman are the same person. They just morph between depending on what's needed.
Right.
If they need music, he morphs into Elfman.
They don't morph. They oingo boingo.
Oh, ew. That sounds messy.
Oof. It doesn't.
But there's definitely a set of rules that you follow. And like, my favorite superhero comic book, which is 100% not for kids and not for most adults, is called The Boys by Garth Ennis.
The Boys.
And Garth Ennis is the same guy who created Preacher. And if you know Preacher, then you know he goes places
that you shouldn't go.
Your nightmares are afraid to go.
Yeah.
In The Boys, it's about a small agency that's designed to keep superheroes in check that decide to be amoral privately while keeping the veneer of being a superhero to the public because their identity means more, or their what the public thinks of them means so much to them that they don't want the public to know what they do behind closed doors.
Right.
But they choose to do things behind closed doors that are what superheroes should not do.
And I saw a meme on, because, you know, we all see memes. I saw a meme on Facebook that said, if I were a Jedi, there's a 100% chance that I would abuse my power.
And become a Sith.
And I keep thinking about that, and I keep thinking, that's something that they talk about a lot. I've been watching Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something they keep bringing up as a smack in the face to the character Supergirl is, well, we've got to keep you under control because what if you decide to misuse your power?
Which she clearly has no designs on.
Right. She's a Kryptonian, and just like Superman, for some inexplicable reason, will never abuse their power because Kryptonians don't abuse their power. I don't know. Anyway, is fine. But as a character, that's what she's designed to do. I'm not actually making that as a...
No.
That sounded derogatory.
This reminds me of a thing that Teller from Penn & Teller says, which is, without religion, then all these... If you don't have religion, then you're going to go out and assault women.
He means Penn.
I'm sorry, Penn. What did I say?
Teller doesn't talk.
Penn and Teller. Yeah, Penn Jillette says, and if you're not religious, if you don't have those rules, you'll go out and be amoral as much as you want. What's to keep you from doing that? And he says, well, I do it exactly as much as I want, which is zero.
Zero.
Without
right.
having that over. And it's like, sure, give me the superpowers. I'm going to be abusive to them as much as I want, which is zero.
Right. We're going to abuse it exactly as much as we want, which is exactly zero.
Which is definitely, I think that question needs to come up to the superhero.
Well, and it's a core line of Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. It's a core line.
Right.
Because
the difference between being the hero and the villain.
Right. Peter Parker has to find that line, and he has to explore it because he's born of anger and you know, hatred and everything like that when his uncle's killed.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, if you don't know that, I mean, even I know that Peter Parker
and
loses
his uncle.
And
Guy is our bar for, if he knows it, everyone must know it.
Right. Well, because I just recently got into all of this lore, and there is a lot of lore out there for superheroes. I mean, there's still stuff that I'm watching Supergirl, and they're bringing in characters, and they're like, this is Red Tornado. And I'm like, and Purple Tornado's and behind him.
And up until now,
I don't know what this means.
Up until now, your extent of lore was Data's evil twin.
Exactly.
Creator,
that was my
brother.
That was totally my extent of lore. But I mean, you know, they keep I can tell that they're trying to bring somebody from the DC universe
which
in.
Which, if you're a hardcore DC
fan,
you know that.
Like, dramatically. And I'm like, you know, you might as well, okay, Troy, now we're going to have the Purple Rock.
Right.
And you're like,
who?
I don't know what the heck that means.
This is exciting for me as a Star Wars fan. recently, I happened to catch an episode of The Flash, which I don't normally watch, and they had brought Mark Hamill on as the Trickster, which he actually played the Trickster way back in the 80s when they did tried to do The Flash then.
Yeah.
But he was very much like the Joker.
Which is what
he voices in the anime.
In
yeah.
the animated series.
So that was I'm like, hey, cool, and... Any case, I think what makes a good superhero is the superhero having their struggle should be the questioning of, are they using their power correctly and being tempted, but then overcoming that temptation. So it's not the beating the villain, but beating the opportunity to be a villain. And
so science fiction makes you think, and fantasy makes you join the fantasy. Mm-hmm. And superheroes are about the character.
Make you define and question your morality and ethics.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Makes you question morality and ethics.
Which, by the way, there's a British show called Misfits. I highly recommend going and checking out. Again, 100% not for kids. But it's what if a bunch of misfit teenagers get superpowers? How do they decide to use those?
Yeah.
It does not go well.
I think we pegged all three yeah. subjects there. Okay, cool. Well, special thanks to our Starbucks who... hosts us and gives us coffee.
And tolerates us.
And, yeah. Remember to stay tuned after our credits for our AUA.
Yep, our Ask Us Anything.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week. I've been Guy.
I've been Troy.
And this is Geek Tank. Talk to us on Twitter at @RMGeekTank or Facebook at Facebook.com/Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. You can always email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
You can find us on iTunes and Google Play. Please give us stars. You can also find us on YouTube. Just look for Rocky Mountain Geek Tank on there and find our channel, subscribe to it, and like the videos that you like.
Geek Tank is a production of Foxplane Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. Your hosts today were Guy S. Davis and C. Troy Floor. Kevin Weibler is our engineer, and our music was composed by David Coyle. If you like what you are hearing, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/Foxplane. I'm Mike Davis. Klaatu Barata Nikto. Good night.
So a while ago, you did an interview with me, and I said some disparaging things about people and beliefs, such as your father. Get any flack for that?
Well, that's an interesting question.
It is, and then if you haven't heard that episode, you're kind of wondering, what is he talking about? Do you want to dig in the archives and put that there, or just recap it from memory?
We can just recap it.
Okay.
Because, I mean, effectively, what we're talking about is gun control.
We interviewed Alex in one of our episodes related to conventions, and it was related to people who... own guns out of fear.
Right, right. And that was sort of his response, was that they're pretty much just...
Well, it's for the people who own guns thinking that that gun will stop a government from stopping them. And it was he was kind of balking at people who have the mentality that their small arms could stop a government force if it decided to become hostile and do something to you.
Exactly, exactly.
And and I guess that in a way you sort of mentioned that your dad kind of falls in that category slightly.
I don't know if I necessarily mentioned that he falls in that category slightly, but Alex knows my father and knows him pretty well, so... I think Alex was just pointedly pointing at him, not necessarily specifically calling him out.
So I guess the question would then be, did your dad even talk to you about that? He probably
didn't. I was going to say, the truth is, I don't think he even listened to it.
So we have to be hypothetical here. If he does listen to it, how do you think he would respond?
Yeah, I think he would. I don't know. I mean, the current political landscape, I think he'd just kind of write us off as all being liberal and then just leave it.
Well, we're the ones drinking the Kool-Aid because we're blind to the government.
Right. So we'd be kind of stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, yeah, that was an interesting question anyway.
I mean, my opinion is, you know, if you have a gun, you can't really shoot your electricity back on or your water back on when the government shuts it down. And
yeah. I mean, smoked out? No.
It's hard
starved out.
I mean, sieges for years and years and years have been the way to take out places. And so you can only prepare for a siege so much.
Yeah.
So... And then my thing is, like, are you really that important that you think the government cares about you? You get to a point to where you're either drone fodder or you're not.
Right.
I'm hoping I'm not.
I'm hoping we all aren't. Well, that was a good question.
Good question. It's better than desserts.
Yeah, I liked it better than desserts.
Well, I actually like desserts better. But
we'll watch it again and again. Okay. Well, cool. We'll see you next week then.
And you can ask us anything.
Questions at RockyMountainGeekTank.com.